This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When the new legislative session started just a few weeks ago, the hope for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick that this was going to be his year to get vouchers or private school choice passed into law. Senate Bill 3 was rolled out with much fanfare, filed by Senate Education Chairman Larry Taylor, a Republican from Friendswood. He would establish two voucher programs, an education savings account and a tax credit scholarship program. But despite a full court press in Austin from Dan Patrick, the private school choice is declared dead. There's always next session, and a proposed $20 billion voucher program is being put forth by President Trump's Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos. So what do you think about private school choice? Do you support it, or do you worry that vouchers would be a negative for public education, the overall education system? That's what we're talking about this hour on The Source, and we invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, to hear your voice on the radio about this topic. You could also email us with your concerns, questions, and comments at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this hour, we're joined by the Reverend Charles Foster Johnson, Executive Director of Pastors for Texas Children. Brendan Steinhauser is a Texas advisor for Ed Choice. Inga Cotton is here in the studio. She runs an education-focused blog, San Antonio Charter Mom, and is a school analyst for Families Empowered. And also with us is Andy Pryor, spokesperson for Texans for Homeschool Freedom. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Brendan Steinhauser over at School Choice, tell us about where do you think what happened with the legislative session? Why are we not seeing a bill being passed?
Well, certainly it's early. It's a bit early for House Chairman Dan Huberty to declare school choice dead on arrival. It's interesting, you know, he did get a bit of a blowback from his grassroots conservatives in his district. The Kingwood Tea Party led a block walk in his district to talk to his neighbors about school choice and the importance of it. The State Republican Executive Committee, which is basically the leadership of the Republican Party of Texas, passed a resolution calling on all committee chairmen in the House and Senate to call a hearing and votes on the top eight legislative priorities, including school choice. And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has been very adamant that Representative Chairman Huberty and others in the House need to get on board with President Trump, with Betsy DeVos, Senator John Cornyn, Senator Ted Cruz, Governor Abbott, and just about every other Republican in the state of Texas and nationally who supports school choice.
So you're saying, Brendan, that it's too early to pronounce it DOA in Austin just yet. There's still some hope.
I think it is. I think that, you know, SB 3 hasn't even had a hearing yet. We'll probably have that happen in the next couple of weeks. You'll probably see that pass the Senate Education Committee and then go on to the full Senate and be passed there. And then once it's in the House, then obviously all of the grassroots Republicans and conservatives who support this around the state will be contacting their House members, asking them to do this. It's in the Republican Party platform. More than 80% of grassroots Republicans voted for school choice in 2012 when it was on the ballot. And again, it's a big priority for the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and Betsy DeVos, as Secretary of Education. So really, the Republicans in the House really are going to face a situation where, you know, their voters want it, their constituents need it, and the people of Texas demand it.
So when you say it was on the ballot, talk about that.
Sure. In the Republican primary, you know, often there'll be issues that are put before the voters on the ballot in the primary campaign. And so in 2012, this issue of school choice was put before well over a million voters, Republican voters statewide, and it asked them whether they would support school choice for Texas. And they overwhelmingly said, yes, we do. In fact, in Dan Huberty's district, that support is even higher. It's 85-86%. And so there's a lot of public support, not only, again, among Republicans, but if you look at the polling data that's available, school choice in different forms has overwhelming support among independent voters, among Hispanic voters, African Americans. It's really the kind of issue that bridges the partisan divide.
But you're using this as to prop up the argument that it passed voters in Texas when actually it passed Republican voters in a non-binding it wasn't really a public debate about the about this issue. It was basically it was an opinion poll at the primary.
It was an opinion poll, just like other publicly available.
Yeah, but you're using it as if it were passed by the voters. That's what you're saying.
Well, it was voted on in terms of an opinion.
By primary voters, by Republican voters, not by the general
people.
So that's a select
group.
The people
who put the governor and the lieutenant governor and all these people into power, those are the people whose votes ultimately decide.
So these are the only people whose opinions matter then?
No, public opinion on Democrats, independents, African-Americans, Hispanics also have a lot of support for school choice.
But aren't there African-Americans and Hispanics who voted on this in the Republican primary?
Sure, there are.
Okay, so I don't understand why you tease that out.
I'm just saying that's another data point. So not only do you have all these studies, all these public opinion polls that show the demographics that support school choice, but also in the Republican primary, among those million-plus voters, the support is overwhelming. So I'm taking both of those as arguments saying, look, there's a lot of support across the board. That was just one example, but there's dozens of other examples of public polling that shows this across the country. And on a personal note, I mean, I've marched with, you know, Democrats, African-American Democrats in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. and other places that we may not see eye to eye on every issue. But on school choice, we both see this as the civil rights issue of our time.
So, Reverend Charles Foster Johnson, private school choice, where are you on this?
Oh, we're opposed to it. It's bad policy. It's come up a dozen times over the past 30 years, and the Texas State Legislature always repudiated. It'll be repudiated again. Basically, our lieutenant governor's driving this. I agree with your guest who says that it's not quite dead. I wouldn't say that it's dead. It's Chairman Huberty was speaking the will of his chamber. The will of his chamber is that vouchers are bad policy. There is no will in the House for the privatization of public education, which is why he said that it would basically what the speaker said. There's just no desire to spend little time and precious resources on a policy that the people of Texas do not want. You know, University of Texas has just come out with a poll that indicates that when you say vouchers instead of school choice, the percentages drop dramatically. I think 7% of those polled said that they favor a voucher policy. We just are against anything that takes public monies to underwrite private schools, mainly for a conservative argument. The conservative argument that we don't want the government meddling in our church schools, in our home schools, in our private schools. Private stays private, public stays public. Any public school educator will tell you that the assessment and the evaluation and the testing is burdensome, if not oppressive. The reason those private entities were started was to get away from that government intervention. And since when has the government provided financial resources not followed by oversight and accountability? It has to be there. It's their constitutional responsibility. Speaking of which, and we can drill deep on all these points, the legislature has zero responsibility over private schools. The constitutional duty is to make suitable provision for public free schools, public free schools. Quote, unquote.
That's a good point, and we're going to get back to that point. We'll explore that further. We'll talk to our other guests and get to our phone calls, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Senate Bill 3, which is a voucher program bill that's being looked at in Austin. Some call it a private school choice or even school choice. It's been declared wounded. Some say it was dead in Austin, but others are saying it's still got a lot of life in it, and people are wondering what it could mean if it was passed here in Texas for education, for private schools, public schools, and education overall. Let me switch over to another one of our guests, Inga Cotton, and you run a San Antonio blog, the San Antonio Charter Moms, and you look at schools. You're a school analyst for Families Empowered. What are you hearing from the parents that you engage with?
What I hear from parents is that they are looking for more choices. Parents don't necessarily look under the hood to try to understand how a particular school is governed. So, for example, I get questions about San Antonio ISD has recently opened even more charter schools that offer different education formats, like dual language schools or Montessori schools. And then I get questions from parents, and they don't quite understand why an SAISD school operates differently than an open enrollment public charter school like KIPP, IDEA, BASIS, or Great Hearts. And these are sort of education nerd questions. Parents are really just want...
an SAISD charter school still has to operate under many of the rules of a public school, right? But a KIPP or other charter school can be more selective. They can decide.
That's actually not true.
Okay.
KIPP and IDEA, the open enrollment public charter schools, have to operate a lottery. They have to take all comers. So, for example, my son is on the autism spectrum, and he can go to a charter school just like any other public school. They can't turn away students who have special needs or who speak Spanish at home or, now private schools do make those distinctions, but open enrollment public charter schools don't.
Okay. And parents, they see that what's happening at one school is not at another school district,
right?
High school district as well.
Right, right. So I run a Facebook group called the San Antonio Charter Moms Discussion Group, and we're up to about 1,600 members, and people just keep adding their friends. They're trying to figure out, like, sometimes it's really detailed questions like how far away can I live from the school and still apply? Or does the school offer bus service or an after-school care? And it can be, parents are looking for these kind of quality of life things. So, for example, this morning there was a question, actually it was posted last night, but I go to bed early. But a parent was really concerned. She's trying to find a pre-K and elementary school that both of her kids can go to. And just based on the brainstorming in the group, it looks like her best option would be actually a Catholic school, because it's in her neighborhood, and it offers the right range of grades. It would offer a full-day pre-K program, whereas IDEA offers a half-day pre-K program. So it's free, but it's only a half-day, right? That's an extra trip in the middle of the day. So it's these practical issues that matter for parents. So to that parent, whether she sends her child to IDEA public schools, which offers free pre-K, or to the Catholic school, she's going to have to pay tuition at the Catholic school. If there were an education savings account or a tuition tax credit that would let her put her kids in the Catholic school, that would improve her quality of life, because then both of her kids could go to the same campus. They could get the extracurriculars they're looking for. That's the kind of issues that matters to parents, is the quality of life details.
Andy Pryor over at Texans for Homeschool Freedom, what do you have to say to what Inga's telling us about parents and choice?
Texas already has the most school choice in the nation. We've had it for years. It goes back to the 80s when my parents made the decision that living below the poverty line, they still wanted to homeschool me and my brother. And I think that's where homeschooling comes from in the state of Texas, and providing people the opportunity to do as they choose. Where we have problems is when government strings, government interference comes, and we know that's going to come if there's funding. The other thing I would point out is that we know people have openly stated that once government subsidies begin in these situations and the money starts to flow from the government to private entities, private schools, the rates that the private schools charge will naturally go up, which means that the parents who are struggling to afford that currently, as many do, will not be able to afford the new prices either, because the government subsidy will not be enough to cover the difference. It'll basically just cover part of it, and they'll still be struggling to cover the difference.
But the promise of SB3 was that it would cover the entire tuition if you use both the plans of the private savings account and the tax credit scholarship. That would cover the whole thing, Andy. That was what we were told.
I would find that very difficult to believe. I don't know the price of this particular Catholic school that Inga was just referencing, but Catholic schools up here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area can range anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 a year. And there's nobody in Austin who is suggesting that there would be $15,000 to $30,000 available annually to any parents through any of these programs. I wanted to circle back as well to something that Mr. Steinhauser mentioned regarding SREC support for the supposed school choice bills in Austin. I heard a rumor this past weekend that the SRAC had a meeting and voted recently that none of the bills currently before the legislature in the House or the Senate that are labeled school choice meet the Texas Republican Party's definition of school choice, and thus they are saying, it's my understanding, that all these bills should be opposed by everyone, and there should be new legislation filed by tomorrow's deadline that would actually meet the Republican Party platform that was voted on last year.
And what is that detail that we need to know? What makes it, whether it qualifies or not? Do you know?
I think that's that I don't know the details on, but it goes back to the definition that was put forth in last year's state Republican convention. And I think that what we're seeing here is a bait and switch where people are saying, yes, we're having school choice votes. Yes, we've got legislation for school choice, just as we were told to do. But in fact, the definitions, when you look at the nitty-gritty details, don't match up the definitions that were asked.
Okay.
And that goes back also to the comment about the difference between vouchers versus school choice.
Okay, so Brendan Steinhauser over at EdChoice, what do you say?
Well, actually, the type of school choice that is in the Republican Party platform includes tax credit scholarships, and both SB 3 and another bill that the Texas Private Schools Association and the Catholic Conference are pushing, a Betancourt bill, Senator Betancourt, have tax credit scholarships as well. So we have SB 3 has an ESA and a tax credit scholarship, and we have another tax credit scholarship bill by Senator Betancourt. So actually, it's just not true. I mean, the SREC, again, voted to ask all House committee chairmen and all Senate chairmen to hold a hearing and votes on the top eight legislative priorities, including school choice. And so that was sent to the speaker, that was sent to the lieutenant governor and all the chairs of the House. School choice has, there's clear data that Republicans in particular overwhelmingly support school choice in Texas, but there's also data to show independents, majorities of Hispanic Texans and Americans support school choice. So this is something that has a lot of public support. Unfortunately, some of our legislators are
What do you say? Hispanic and Americans support school choice?
Hispanic Texans and Hispanic Americans, a majority of those two groups that overlap support school choice in this country.
Okay, all right. But let me get a caller in on this. Nikki has called in, and Nikki, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I would like to address a couple of things in this specific Senate Bill 3. I think something that hasn't been mentioned yet is that what's going to happen with the education savings account is basically a parent applies for a debit card, and they receive cash on the debit card based on certain qualifications, income and special needs, and then the average family. And that debit card can then be used to purchase or pay for approved materials, and the approved materials are by the controller of the state of Texas. Now, this is not going to be choice, because what's going to happen is it's going to take all the private education, as you've already discussed, and turn it public. It's all approved by the state. It's approved by the comptroller, and the TEA is going to have a say. And so when this is being argued fix public education.
Nikki, your call is really breaking up. It's really hard. It's burdensome to really for the listener. So let me get a reaction from Brendan Steinhauser of EdChoice about how this would work. Is it like a debit card like she talks about, and how does it operate?
It is, yeah. I think I got the gist of the question. It's about kind of the mechanics of Senate Bill 3 and the education savings account. So yes, the parents would have a debit account that they can use on approved education expenses. People who are vendors who are offering these things, if you're homeschooling or if you're offering curriculum or tutoring or things like that, it has to be pre-approved. It has to be licensed vendors. There's also an audit that happens. I believe it's quarterly. The controller looks at that and makes sure that, you know, there's no issues. They make sure there's no issues of fraud. You know, there are criminal penalties basically for anybody that would commit any kind of fraud. So there's a lot of safeguards in there for how to use those funds. But again, at the end of the day, this takes the power and the freedom and puts it back in the hands of the parents to act as consumers for their children. We know that market competition works. We know that when you put the money and the power back in the hands of the parent and the family, they can decide for their children how best to educate them, whether it is a traditional public school or a public charter school or private school or homeschool, that should be up to the parents.
Right. So, to this point that we heard from two of our guests so far, the concerns that when public money starts flowing into private schools, that the public policies will then follow forth as it should, and that would take away much of the autonomy and freedom that these private schools would have, Brendan.
Well, the Texas Private Schools Association, for example, TPSA, is the main sponsor of the tax credit scholarship bill. That's their preferred method. And so they're supportive of school choice. You also have Senator Huffines, who has come out and said, as a homeschooler, as a supporter of homeschooling in Texas and someone who wants to protect that, he has authored legislation to prohibit any regulations on homeschooling, to prohibit further regulations. I mean, the people that support school choice tend to be people that believe in small government and freedom and in market competition. These are not people who would allow or want more government regulation. And if you think that Dan Patrick is somebody that would support that, then you haven't been paying attention to his career over the last few years in the Senate and as lieutenant governor.
Well, I mean, let's not get into that. But there is this public money going into private schools, yes or no?
This is individuals' taxpayer dollars being given back to them by a government that took it from them in the first place.
Okay, so that's a yes.
Well, it goes to the parent, and then the parent can choose whether to go to a private school.
So public money going to a private school,
No, it's the money is actually going from the government back to the parent, and then they get to choose whether to go to a private school or do homeschooling or virtual online schooling or whatever choice they make. So that's the main difference between a traditional voucher program and an education savings account.
Right. I know you have a lot of, steps that are involved, but in the end, it is, a court would find what? That this was public money or private money?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to, I can't tell
it's,
you
it's
what
gone, a, it's been, it's all been, courts it's been would, litigated before.
Would say.
It's been litigated. Well, this is not the first time.
If you're asking my opinion about the dollars and how, I mean, that's one thing. You're asking what different courts would say, depending on where they are, they may say something different, but philosophically, I think most of us who support this would say these are our tax dollars as parents, and we don't get to decide how to spend them on education. We can decide where to go to the grocery store, whether we
you
shop
get to
at
vote
Whole Foods
on who's,
HEB.
Who's at the school board. That's how that works.
Okay, but we're still talking about our dollars that are being confiscated from the government without any accountability that we have on these schools. Where's the accountability for the failing public schools? The schools like Harold Dutton mentioned in his remarks last week. That have been failing for 7 years. Where do parents have a recourse when the school is not serving their individual children? What can they do unless they can afford under the current system to do homeschooling or private schooling? They still have to pay those property taxes. They still have to pay the taxes to the state government. So why aren't we talking about the failures within the system currently and throwing more money at it? When I challenge those on the call and others who are listening, how much money does it take per year where you would be satisfied per pupil? How much spending? Because if you look at the course of history in this state and across the country, the money generally goes up with some dips here and there, but we've been spending more money and academic outcomes are flatlining.
Okay.
So where's the accountability?
There's a lot there, and we'll get into it. We're going to take a two-minute break. We'll be right back. We'll get some of our other guests to respond to some of these issues that Andy Pryor just brought, that Brendan Steinhauser just brought up from Ed Choice. Our phone lines are full, but you can call in later on, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Whether you call it private school choice or vouchers, Senate Bill 3 appears to be having a rough go of it at the Texas legislature. San Antonio State Representative and House Speaker Joe Strauss has been one of the reasons why that is. He's proven to be a firm barrier to legislation that would take funds away from private schools and divert it to private classrooms. We're talking about that this hour. What is school choice? What's the driving force, the concept, the principle behind this? Would it improve public education overall? Supporters like Greg Abbott, our governor, call this the civil rights issue of our time. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. We just heard quite a bit from Brendan Steinhauser, from a Texas advisor for Ed Choice. Let's get some reaction to that from Reverend Charles Foster Johnson, Executive Director of Pastors for Texas Children. And Reverend.
Well, several things come to mind. First of all, when you distinguish vouchers from the general term school choice, you get much, much greater pushback and disagreement. The Republican Senate members and House members generally don't favor this policy. Mr. Steinhauser mentioned Senator Huffines, he does. Senator Betancourt, he does. You know, you talk to some other, most of those Republican Senate members wish this would go away. They say it's bad policy, particularly the rural Republican Senate members, for whom there are very few private schools, where the public schools are very high performing, where the public school is at the center of the community. Those Senate members, particularly the House members, my goodness, there's no desire to deliberate this policy in the House, and that's why Speaker Strauss rightfully is channeling his resources on other issues. But the Senate Republican Senate members, too. Second, the so-called failed schools, and we don't use those terms, because even in those low-performing schools, children are loved, they're unconditionally accepted, and they are given a good quality education even in those schools. We have about 100 out of 8,500 that are low-performing, and Representative Dutton, who with whom I was on the panel last Friday in Houston, mentioned his schools in Kashmir. Look, they're not properly funded. We're 48th in the country in per pupil spending. It goes up and down to about 45th in the country, depending on the year and depending on the other states. And we are not properly funding our schools, and our teachers still are doing a good job. One more point, and then I'll rest for a minute. Look, this is a violation of religious liberty. Do we want our public tax dollars supporting religious schools that teach things we don't agree with, whether they're Baptist, I'm a Baptist, or Roman Catholic, or Muslim, or Hindu, or secular humanist? I think the answer is no. It is a public trust. Education's a public trust, like water, like fire protection, like police protection, like roads. All the citizens put their money through their tax dollars into a community chest to support the provision for all the people. I don't get a voucher just because I have a private security guard to protect my home. I don't get a road voucher because I don't travel on a certain highway. And we shouldn't provide public money for private schools for the same exact reason. We've been down this road in other states. The reason Texans don't have vouchers is because they have not worked well in other states. The data is in. Duke University has just come out with a study just this week on the voucher program in North Carolina. 93% of those receiving vouchers are for a religious school, a church school education, the performance of which is not as good as the traditional public school. So, and the civil rights issue of our time, my goodness, this society was integrated, racially integrated, through the neighborhood and community public school, where red and yellow, black and white, learn to live together, to understand each other, to appreciate each other, to work out cultural conflicts together. And so to call the privatization of public education a civil rights issue, frankly, is offensive to us.
Andy Pryor at Texans for Homeschool Freedom, your reaction?
I think there's a number of issues that with what Brendan Steinhauser pointed out. Texans have the ability at any time they want to choose any form of education they feel is in the best interest of their kids right now. We have zero regulations of private schools, home schools, private organizations, and anything, any type of legislation is regulation that would increase the burden on homeschools and on private schools. Therefore, there is no way to claim that this doesn't increase regulation. It is an increase of regulation just purely by the mere fact that we don't have regulation of private schools. We don't have regulation of homeschools at the moment. I also think that the comment that, this is people getting their money back from the government. Well, if that's true, then the vouchers, as they really are, or these education savings accounts, which is basically debit cards, should be limited to the amount of taxes that those parents would actually pay. if they're targeting the lower income communities and the people who cannot afford higher priced private school education, that's fine. But that means that those folks don't actually pay the amount of taxes that they're going to receive in cash on a debit card or in the total value of a voucher, and thus they are getting a subsidy from public funds, from the government, and that is the very reason why it disproves the claim that Mr. Steinhauser made a few minutes ago.
So you're saying that this is public money. It's not their own money. It's money that...
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just want to get a caller in.
Andy, thank you. I'm going to get a caller in on this. Paul. Hey, Paul, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about the... that I was believing that school choice, I guess it's a misguided solution to, like, a misplaced problem, which is, you know, you're trying to fund better education. So, I mean, I guess we should look at where Texas is ranked nationally, like where we rank nationally economically, and how little we fund the school with regard to how large our economic power is in the nation. So I guess I agree with the gentleman earlier that was speaking to how we don't fund education properly.
Okay.
I guess also just one quick point that I guess we were cemented in the property tax funding, you know, by the old Supreme Court ruling about SAIC versus Rodriguez.
Right.
I mean, and perhaps, like, we should readdress that and move away from property tax, perhaps. I don't know an other solution to combat that decision, but, I mean, perhaps, I mean...
I hear that. I don't think anything short of a revolution will change the way that we fund schools, getting away from... district-wide property taxes. Well, Inga Cotton, San Antonio Charter Moms is your blog. You do a school analysis for Families Empowered. When people say, you know, we have to think about all of the children in Texas, not just my community and my kid. I mean, how do we balance that? And what do parents think about that? Because you think parents are mainly motivated by about my kid, and I understand why that's a priority.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, all parents love their children and are trying to find the best for their children. I think one thing is that we tend to forget choice. It's sort of like air. It's already everywhere already, but some people have more access to it than others. So anybody who has, when they're buying a house, has researched, well, what school is it zoned for?
Well, some air is bad. Some guy's standing next to you smoking a stinky cigar. You know, some people have bad air and some people have nice, clean air.
Right, right. Well, people with means in San Antonio for decades have been moving to the suburbs, and it's created inequality. And one thing that I'm observing is that the growth of charter schools in San Antonio has allowed people to sometimes stay in the city and yet still choose a high-performing school for their children. And my hope is that... if the legislature does allow families to access private schools through an ESA or a tax credit program, it would be another tool that parents could use. And it's true that these systems have limits. Like, so for example, the tax credit program is targeted towards lower income families, right? So some families might make too much money to qualify for it, and then they would just have to pay for the private school out of pocket. So it's true that these programs won't help everyone, but if they are able to help some people, I think that's a good thing. So if it helps a family with a special needs child to access a school, even if the school is too expensive for the ESA or the tuition tax credit to cover the whole thing, if it helps offset the cost, it might make that private school for special needs kids available to that family when it wouldn't otherwise have been.
Right. So, but the special needs kids are they can go to these charter schools and just as good as services at a public school.
You know, it's so individual. I mean, charter schools do serve special needs kids, but sometimes they're not able to modify their program enough.
There was a scandal in Texas this last year that public schools were not doing a very good job of providing the services.
That's right. It's really shocking, yeah, that they're actually setting a quota of how many students could qualify for special needs, and they would deny kids services just so they could stay underneath that quota.
Yeah, an artificial quota that they said didn't exist.
Right, right. So I couldn't, when I read that news, it validated things that people had been telling me that I just couldn't believe were actually true, but they were.
Right. So Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to continue the conversation. The school choice controversy, private school choice or voucher programs, whatever. This is a controversy that's raging across the states, also national news. Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education that was, put in by Donald Trump. She is definitely a big proponent of vouchers and wants to get $20 billion in federal funds for a national voucher program. This is an issue that continues to grow, and we're going to keep talking about it here. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about voucher programs or private school choice here in Texas and across the nation. They're being tried out. They're trying to pass SB3 up in Austin, and it's running into a buzzsaw up there. So what do you think about private school choice or vouchers? The number is 210-614-8980. Got a lot of calls here. Let's try and get them on the air. Constance. Hi, Constance. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for...
Okay. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're cutting in and out, but keep going.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Hello. Thank you so much for taking the phone call. As a public teacher, public Texas certified teacher. Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay.
I do live in the country, so I live in the rural area. I do appreciate you having this conversation. Because it's very important for all children, just not public school children, homeschooling children.
All right, okay, we're just going to have to move on because our phone system is just apparently on the fritz. I'm sorry about that, Constance. She is opposed to this. She says that private schools are becoming a business. I don't see anything actually wrong with private schools becoming a business because, you know, that's how you get things done. But Brendan Steinhauser, advisor for Education Choice, what do you say?
Well, you know, I also come from a rural area. I can relate to Constance there. I grew up in a small town. I went to public schools, K through 12. I had one teacher in particular that was a huge benefit to me in my life and got me prepared for the University of Texas. But, you know, I think about if I would have had school choice as a student in that area, if I would have had the opportunity to decide, or my parents helped, you know, could have decided where to send me to school. There was probably four schools within 12 miles. There was a private school that went up until the age of eighth grade. And I think about, you know, if my parents would have been able to make that choice, the competition that would have created among those various school districts for our dollars and for me, for the child. You know, we know that business has to deal with the profit incentive, right? To succeed in business, you have to have a profit. The problem with government-run schools is that there is no profit incentive. It's sort of like the post office or, you know, government-run healthcare or something like that. It becomes it becomes too big. It becomes too burdensome. They don't have the incentive, really, to compete for those dollars. And we have studies that show where school choice is implemented, it not only improves the lives and the educational outcomes of the students who participate, but it also improves the quality of the education of the public schools. That is one of the greatest benefits of school choice, because we do support great public schools. We support great public school teachers. We just want to customize the education. My goodness, in the age of the iPhone and Amazon and all of the technological breakthroughs of the 21st century, why are we stuck in a 19th century education system? And by the way, nobody answered my question. How much money would it take to satisfy you? You keep saying more money, more money, more money. I want to know a number. How much money per pupil per year in Texas would satisfy that demand so we can meet that demand and then we can move on to solving the problem?
So Brendan, then you would support a bill in the legislature that would conduct a study and come up with a number. What should Texas spend on public education per student?
Well, I'm asking the.
No, I'm asking you. You asked the question. Well, let me ask you, because this is something that's been put up in Austin repeatedly and has been shot down by the leadership. They will not allow a law to be passed that would order a study to come up with how much money it would take to educate per student. We don't have that number.
Well, that's a separate question. That's about a law. That's about a study.
That's coming up with the answer to the question that you propose.
No, I'm providing solutions and ideas from my perspective. I'm asking the critics and opponents to provide that number to me. I want to hear from them. I'm not saying there should be a law to create the study. I'm saying if you keep saying more money is needed. I mean, I remember doing work in Pittsburgh, for example, where the schools are failing there, and they were spending $13,000 per student per year. Philadelphia, the same. I think even higher. So, you know, I want to know, what does it take per pupil per year for our critics to satisfy that demand? Because they don't have any solutions. It's put more money in a failing system. That's okay. Not serving Texas children.
Well, let me jump in. It's not a failing system. Our public schools are doing a phenomenal job educating our children. AAP scores are going up. Graduation rates are climbing. They're doing all that on stretched dollars. Let me respond to the comment that our public schools are government schools or government bureaucracies. You know, that's just simply not true. There are neighborhood schools that are supported by the public trust. These are citizens that believe in this public interest, or as we put it as ministers, God's common good. Now, for some parents, as has been said in this conversation, private school and homeschool is a valid choice. That's a beautiful thing. We affirm that wholeheartedly. We just don't think the government ought to be entangled in those homeschools and those private schools. And if the vaunted factor of competition were so effective, then why aren't those private schools filled? Here's why. Because they're highly selective on the students they take. And that's why so many private school headmasters and principals are opposed to the voucher. Vouchers are not conservative. This is why Texas will repudiate them one more time. Hopefully the lieutenant governor will change the subject. We don't know why he keeps cramming this bad policy down the throats of Texas people when really his own chamber doesn't support it, particularly the other chamber doesn't support it. These are Republican conservative people. We are conservative Baptist and Methodist and Church of Christ pastors in all these small towns in East Texas and West Texas. We vote Republican overwhelmingly, but we don't support the privatization of our public schools where our spouses teach, our family members are employed. That's a major economic generator for the community. And that's why these rural Republican Senate members want this policy to go away. What's the per pupil amount? Not sure. I'm not sure what it would be for Texas because, as you say, it's never properly been studied. The average tuition in a private school, what is it, about $12,000? The average per pupil spending in Texas now is $9,000, a little bit over $9,000. And the Supreme Court, while finding the system barely constitutional, did say it was Byzantine and not meeting the needs of our students. So, Speaker Strauss, San Antonio, wonderful public servant and Representative Joe Strauss, properly is leading his chamber to find additional needed monies for public education. Chairman Huberty's bill that he brought out on Tuesday, and we are so proud of him, is $1.6 billion. That will not begin to solve the problem. It will begin to take a first step to solve the problem. It's not at all the total needs that our public schools require. We're probably about $6 billion behind. But here, Mr.
You've got a lot there. So, Reverend, appreciate you adding all that. Let me read two emails that we got from our listeners. One of them is from John. I'm happy that my tax dollars are being used for public education, but resent that one penny of my taxes goes to a religious outfit. Another email comment from Sev. I might be able to get behind a voucher program if, and only if, we put forth a plan to help our public schools. So, Inga, what do you think about those reactions, particularly what Sev has to say?
I'm sorry, was that the question about
religious
schools?
That was the one about he might support a voucher program or some sort of a program that would provide more school choice, but we got to make sure that the overall system that we have in place is well-funded.
So the fact is that public charter schools are getting slightly less money per student in the current situation, and public charter schools don't get money for facilities, and yet there are many public charter schools that are outperforming the neighborhood.
And there's some that are underperforming.
Yeah,
we had
some.
We had one shut down in San Antonio yesterday.
That's true, because they served bad food.
When was the last time a government-run public school shut down a failing school? Never. They don't shut them down. There's no accountability.
There's all kinds of accountability, and they're closed all the time.
Look at North Forest ISD in Houston.
The point that I wanted to make was that it's not that adding more money isn't going to fix it unless you have innovation. And we can see in San Antonio ISD, we have new leadership and innovation. And I'm seeing families actually sometimes leave charter schools to go to new schools models operated by San Antonio ISD. So it takes money and innovation to succeed.
Right. And we're seeing here in San Antonio with some troubled school districts where TEA is coming in and making big changes. So
that's true. Appointing boards of managers to replace elected school boards that were so dysfunctional that they couldn't even keep the school running.
Trying to keep them going as planned. Real quickly, Andy Pryor for Texans for Homeschool Freedom. Hadn't heard from you in a while. What do you think?
Couple things. First of all, I'm not aware of any homeschool family to spend anywhere near the amount of money that was just mentioned as the average per pupil spending for public schools or private schools. If I know of any homeschoolers that are spending more than a couple thousand dollars a year for their kids and putting out fantastic students who go to some of the highest quality universities in the entire nation, I'd be shocked. I don't know any homeschool families that are millionaires either, which makes me very offended by
I know one.
Lieutenant Governors. Well, that's awesome, but I don't. And what I'm saying is Lieutenant Governors using class warfare rhetoric and telling us that we have to be wealthy to homeschool and have school choice, and that's flat out wrong. Mm. I don't know any homeschool families that are millionaires. All the homeschool families that I know of are lower income to middle income families who are struggling to get by just as much as the rest of the world in a normal environment, normal economy, and yet make the sacrifices to spend a couple thousand dollars a year to educate their kids at home through alternative methods, and they're putting out fantastic students.
Yeah, but they got something that money can't buy, though, you know, which is that really that parent involvement. And that's priceless. And I wish we could figure out a way to bottle that and get that into all homes in Texas. But I want to thank all of our guests. We're out of time. This is an issue that continues to boil across the state and across the nation of school choice vouchers. Our guests have been Reverend Charles Foster Johnson for Pastors for Texas Children, Brendan Steinhauser, Texas Advisor for Ed Choice. Also with us in the studio, Inga Cotton. Her blog is San Antonio Charter to Moms. And also with us is Andy Pryor, spokesperson for Texans for Homeschool Freedom. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.